And we're rolling.
Oh, we're on. Okay. Hello.
Hello.
I am Wayne Ingram.
Serious actor.
Serious actor. Alongside
Jem.
Mr.
Jem, that's me.
Jem.
Jem.
Do you want to give them your last name? Or?
Well, I would, but it would probably just confuse them.
Yeah, true. So, that's Jem with a C, by the way.
C, Turkish. Yeah.
Do you spell your name C, Turkish?
That's how I just sign it at the end.
C, Turkish. Okay, we don't actually have a name for our podcast.
We don't need a name yet, do we? Yeah, we should have had a name, really.
We should have had a name before we recorded.
We'll think of a name before we put this up, anyway.
Yeah, well, welcome to the...
show.
The show.
Fill in the blank.
The yet unnamed show.
Yeah.
Which, obviously, before you've listened to it, will probably have a name.
Yes.
So, if you're listening in the future, which you will be...
Or if we actually have any listeners.
Or if we have any listeners,
we're
yes.
being a bit ambitious already.
We are, actually.
We're already hitting above our weight.
This is actually our first recording.
If you can tell.
Which already is going swimmingly well. I'm sitting talking to a black box.
And I'm sitting in a shithole of a room.
Hey, look, I try to look after it as best I can.
Should we probably get started?
Yes, we better had. Right, so, bit about ourselves. I am a trainee actor at the University of Northampton, which, funnily enough, is in Northampton. And... Jem, what would you say you are a trainee of?
Well, I'm a bit of a jack of all trades, really, because a media production degree sort of does a bit of everything. So, do a bit of filming, do a bit of radio, never done podcasting, you can probably tell. But, yeah, just do a bit of everything, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm no radio DJ either, to be fair, but then I'm an actor, so... That's my excuse. That's
so you
I'm
can at least
it.
Pretend to be
I
a radio...
I can pretend to be a radio DJ.
Oh, I see.
Welcome! Yeah. No, I won't go into
No,
that.
Just don't do that.
Okay, so if we were to say that our podcast had any point, what would you say it was?
I think we're a bit of a hybrid, aren't we?
Yeah, I guess so.
Plus, that sounds really good.
Hybrid. Maybe we should call ourselves the Hybrid Show.
Possibly.
So
I like that. It's an actual show. We have our own show.
We have a show, the Jem and Wayne Show.
Well, that sounds really good.
So yeah, really, I think the emphasis really is for us to say that we're not yet professionals.
Yeah, so we can't really, we don't want to act as if we're actually trying to say to you lot that we know what to do and how you should do stuff.
No.
But we're in the process of learning.
Yeah, and I think what will be useful for any listeners, if there are any of you, please be listeners. I would say we are aimed at the people who are trying to get their foot in the door, really.
Yeah.
Break into an industry that, being both creatives,
really.
Is really a very hard industry to break into.
Mm-hmm.
The competition is fierce, like dog-eat-dog type stuff. So we're going to go through a few things like...
Sort of give you and sort of show you our progress, how we're
yeah,
doing.
Yeah, I guess so. And also, you know, keep up with industry news, all that stuff. Stuff that's really grabbing our attention as young, up-and-coming media, creative, arty-farty types.
Aye.
So, first of all, I think we should talk about...
What we're actually going to talk about.
What we're actually going to talk about. Which, we went to see the King's Speech only yesterday. Today being, of course, the 16th of January, 2011, for those listening in the distant, distant future. so we went to see it yesterday, being the 15th of January.
Which was bloody expensive.
It was!
Overpriced.
Avoid cinemas at peak times.
£6.50, and that was a student discount.
Yeah.
Can't imagine what the full price was.
Well, you're probably looking at about £8, probably.
Luckily, we did stash in our own popcorn.
Yes.
That was good 75p popcorn.
I think your tweet...
It was a bit weird that you brought a rucksack with you to the cinema, though.
Well, what else were
and
we
going
to stick
with popcorn?
And
we do have big beards, so luckily didn't... we didn't cause any security issues. It all went swimmingly well.
And I had my little bottle of what, 20 millilitres of Coke.
It weren't even real Coke, was it?
It was that cheap.
Oh, bloody
cheap,
yeah.
Morrison's own Coke, yeah, which is very, very nice, for the record.
Other Cokes available.
Thank you, Morrison's.
Other supermarkets available. So anyway, we probably should get back onto the point.
Yeah,
here.
So what are we talking about today? So we're going to go through what we thought of the King's Speech.
Yes.
And then we're going to have a look at some big industry news.
News.
Well, what we think is big industry news, anyway. The yeah. sort of stuff that we've gone, interesting, might be worth talking about.
Then we've got a serious topic.
Yes, our serious topic for the I would say week.
Probably, yeah. Well, actually, we don't know how long, yeah. how many of these we're going to do.
Could be month.
Depends on the listeners.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, what
no
is it?
Pressure.
What are we actually doing?
Today we're going to talk about, because your main focus really at the moment on your career is the old script writing.
Yeah.
And we write together occasionally. And really,
not
it's sort of sorry.
Not enough.
No. Apologies.
Never mind.
Apologies. But yeah, so we're going to talk about. how the script writing and the acting sides of things really mesh together, and how sometimes actors can make good writers, why they can make good writers, and also how, when we're working together,
yeah.
the two different disciplines
yeah.
really help each other.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that. And then after that, we're going to close with a look at the...
Quite an interesting competition,
writing competition, which we think is very, very interesting. It's a different slant on things.
Very original.
I guess let's roll.
Let's get cracking. Cue the jingle.
Okay, so
let's start. The King's Speech.
Have we got Tale of the Tape?
That's how we were at the beginning of the podcast, to be honest.
To be fair, I didn't have a clue what I was saying.
And we still don't really know. We're kind of going with the flow right now.
Yeah, I don't know if you can tell.
This is not the King's Speech.
No. No, it's most definitely not the King's Speech.
Why are we trying to put up a King's Speech anyway?
I don't know. Anyway...
The King's Speech.
The King's Speech.
So what did you actually like about the King's Speech, Wayne?
Well, all in all,
mm.
I'm going to be honest.
Yes.
I thought it was a very, very good film.
For what reasons?
Well, I mean, it was educational for one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't usually like those sorts of films. But I actually found myself quite absorbed in it. I thought the acting from both Colin Firth.
Yep.
It is Firth. I will get Colin Firth and Colin Farrell mixed
not,
up.
It's definitely not Colin Farrell.
No, he's the Irish one, isn't he?
Yeah.
Colin Firth and Geoffrey Rush.
Yep.
I thought their performances were fantastic. I mean, I'm a big fan of Geoffrey Rush anyway. I think he's very good at quite poignant performances, but I thought their on-screen relationship was very, very.
It was kind of a bit like that. What was it? The Sherlock Holmes, weren't it? In a sort of way.
Yes, actually, I hadn't thought about that.
It was pretty similar. They sort of have that banter with one another. But no, I liked it. But I guess it's a bit more. It's extra because you think it's actually part of the monarchy having a sort of normal conversation with that man on the street.
Well, they played off that very, very well, I thought.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's what the most of humour came from, wasn't it?
Well,
the fact that he was the king being the fish out of water, in a way.
Well, yeah, and also the fact that Geoffrey Rush's character, Lionel Logue?
Yeah, that's right.
He had a lot of nerve the way he spoke to him sometimes.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, like when he's calling him Bertie, and he turns around to him and says, well, only my family call me that, don't call me that.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, if I can't call you that, then we won't speak.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe in some ways it's actually, the film probably works, it's good for audiences, because we probably put ourselves in sort of Lionel's footing, and we sort of think, well, maybe, like, that's how the kings and people shouldn't see themselves, maybe as maybe pompous and better than us. Yeah. And sort of by bringing them down to our level, yeah, maybe that's what...
And I mean, I guess it's quite... The timing of it as well is quite poignant. What with this, the whole wedding between Prince William and...
The woman.
The woman.
What's her name?
His fiancée.
The riffraff, weren't it? We didn't say that. We can't say that, can we?
That's, we'll that's bordering that on treason.
That is treason. Well, they're not actually married yet.
No, Katie?
Oh, that's the one.
Katie Hudson!
Katie Hudson.
Oh, gosh. Bloody hell.
Oh, yeah. Anyway.
Okay. But yes, it's poignant with that because, I mean, they're going with the whole... we are a modern royal couple.
Yeah.
As opposed to more like... King George.
Sort of more of that, instead of like the sort of them and us, now they're sort of trying to make themselves like
a big thing on the news has been Katie Hudson will not be going in horse and carriage to Westminster Abbey. She will instead be going via motor car. And that's been a big news story, apparently. And I think the way that Lionel Logue, Geoffrey Rush's character, the way he manages to break down the barrier that's been put up. And I mean, it's quite a moving relationship as well, I think. Just because... I mean, I found myself, at the end, feeling very, very concerned for Geoffrey Rush's character.
Yeah.
Just because I thought, well, okay, he's delivered that now. Now what happens to him?
Last shot, didn't you, where he was sort of staring on as if he'd finished his job with the king now, and it's sort of like, although the king was out there getting greeted by these thousands of people, yet still in the background, that is, he's that man really who's gave that king his confidence.
Yeah, and it was very... I mean, I just loved Geoffrey Rush's character. I think
he was sort of like a dad in some ways. I'd say like he was sort of his child in a way, sort of put him out into the world.
And I felt, to be honest, I mean, I know you asked me yesterday when we left the cinema who I preferred acting wise. And I don't think acting wise I could compare them, because they were two opposite ends of the spectrum. You know, Geoffrey Rush was doing a very ordinary character with a bit of balls, quite close to himself, I think, more so anyway than Colin Firth. You know, I mean, no disrespect to Geoffrey Rush's performance at all, but I do feel that Geoffrey Rush stole the show. Yeah. I felt sympathy more for Geoffrey Rush's character than I did for Colin Firth's character, which I don't think is how it was meant to be.
No, definitely.
But I mean, I was very moved when it looked like...
It sort of left him.
It left him, yeah. And we might want to put some spoiler alerts on somewhere.
Oh, yeah, we probably should.
Just in case people don't know what happens in the film. But yeah, I felt more attached to Geoffrey Rush's character.
But then that goes back to what I was saying before, though, because the fact that he's a king, so we never sort of can see ourselves as a king's foot in our eyes. It's nice that we see that he still has issues and problems.
Mm.
But I think because Lionel Logue is a very sort of common person, we can maybe...
Yeah,
that's maybe why we have more of a sort of attraction to him.
Yeah, maybe.
Because he is the king, and, well, he should kind of go through those sort of things. Being a king, you have to have the responsibility.
Because although I guess...
Although, I've got to say...
Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert!
But when he does finally get his get his speech out, I do feel really proud of the king. Like, you feel really sort of relieved for him.
I kind of felt almost like the king, Albert, Bertie, George VI, I kind of felt all the way through like he was a child.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like his character was an adult. It was almost like seeing Robin Williams in Jack.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that's probably the script where I was probably going for a bit there, because he had to sort of be mothered in a way by, like, when he goes, oh, I'm not going to speak, and he's very sort of against doing anything that he's told to do, like a naughty child, so...
True. So, in terms of the writing, then?
Storyline.
storyline.
Well, to be honest, as I said to you yesterday, like, at first glance, you don't think a film about a man who stutters and he needs to deliver a speech would be that sort of appealing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I recommended it to somebody yesterday, and they said, well, what's it about?
It's a bit of a hard sell.
It is a very hard sell. Because I said to them, I said, it's a very good film. And they went, okay, so what's it about? And I said, well, it's about a guy, the king, the future king, who has a stammer. And he goes to a speech therapist to cure his stammer.
Yeah, basically.
And that's the film. Essentially.
Yeah.
There are a few problems here and there with his brother.
But I do think, though, as you were saying, though, but like, if we think of what we've been actually talking about, it's not been particularly about the actual stammer itself. We've actually been talking about this relationship between those two people, like Lionel and the King. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe that's actually the...
So maybe the point about the film is less about the stammer
and more about the relationship between...
The royal and the non-royal.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, perhaps. Or, perhaps, I guess, this whole, yeah, okay, he has difficulties. Everybody has difficulties. But this guy could overcome them. Okay, yeah, he's royalty.
Yeah.
But
he's still human.
He didn't have the support of anybody other than Lionel and his wife. Those were the only people that actually supported what he was doing. You know, you had the church.
Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert!
Warning him. Warning him that, that this Lionel guy was a nobody.
Yeah.
And that they wanted to choose the therapist. But then he has had people choose a therapist, and all the therapists who had qualifications, it didn't work.
Yeah.
And again, maybe that's another point, which is something I always go on about, and my dad frequently talks about, is, you know, a few years ago, experience was everything. You didn't need a qualification. You didn't need something written on paper to say, oh, yes, I'm good at this, to be able to do anything. All you had to say was, I've done this for 5 years, and people would go, oh, okay. And that's something I think which is very relevant to now. I mean, everything's turning very academic.
Yeah. To be honest, what I thought you was actually the route you were actually going down when you were saying that was how you said about him, how he has his wife as supporting Lionel. I was thinking maybe what, and as you're saying, because he's the king, he doesn't have much connections with other people. Where maybe what he actually is actually saying as well is maybe that as us as normal, like the common person, we've got lots of people around us, so maybe we can. We've got so many different layers of support, which we don't always use, and maybe that's where we have that accessible to us. Maybe that's another, maybe a little point that I may be putting across.
Yeah, maybe, actually.
That
I mean, there are actually
a lot
of messages.
Yeah, there are probably
a lot of
lot.
Messages in there, which...
And we're probably only pulling a few of them out.
Yeah, I mean, we were some of the youngest people in the cinema as well.
Yeah, we were.
We turned up on a Saturday afternoon expecting it to be empty.
Well, we did walk into the cinema and see most of the yobs in the town. Thought we'd bloody yobs mating hour or something.
Yeah, all the teenagers. We thought, going to see the King's Speech.
Me and you with
so.
Your fucking bloody pat your rucksack full of popcorn. Thought we were mincemeat. I think I would have left you behind with the popcorn.
It was good popcorn, though, for some
It was actually good. Pretty good.
Okay, another thing that we were talking about then was the really cinematic
Oh, yeah,
type
definitely.
Stuff. There were a lot of very, 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 very clever things that were subtly hidden.
Well, loads of detail, just the amount of detail I go into. Just the scenery just was amazing just to look at.
Well, I mean, one thing which stuck out to me, which you briefly mentioned when we were talking yesterday, again, was the when he's gone off, when he's storming off away from Lionel, and that moment where he's trying to light his cigarette, and his lighter
his
keeps
lighter,
stammering.
It's like his lighter's actually stirring itself,
Which
well,
I
that,
think
that's actually at the beginning of the film. Yeah, it was at the beginning of the film, and then that later on in the
film. Yeah, every time...
He's trying, yeah, he's
He
really...
never gets it first time.
No.
At all. Although, actually, it might be interesting to note if later on,
He manages to. That's a good point, actually.
Maybe feels to watch it again and have a look at that. Yeah, because they seem to be very clever with that.
Yeah, because they start it with the film with him doing that. Mm. And then again when he walks off.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's interesting.
Mm. Might be worth a look. But then again, the signs on the walls that they've had painted on the sides of buildings and stuff, some of them were quite poignant as well, which they would have been at the time anyway. But no, I thought there was some really, artistically, it was very, very...
Yeah, it was a great visual film, really.
Mm. And his study as well looked fantastic from a run-down perspective. Again, it was very much that symbolism of you had royalty in a...
palace.
And then you've got the common man in this run-down little warehouse-type looking place. And the fact that you've got royalty sitting on a, you know, moth-eaten couch. talking about...
His own issues, his problems.
Which really brought the royalty...
Maybe that's it, isn't it? Maybe that's another little bit. It's just saying that we're bringing you down to earth by putting you into our own environment. Yeah.
But again, something I always say, which is maybe we are looking too into it. Maybe there was no intention for a big, deep message there. Maybe he just wanted to show that stammerers can overcome it. Yeah. Maybe that was just the message, and maybe we are looking too much into things, but... if that was the case, I think he's done a very good job of showing loads of other potential.
Yeah, no, definitely. But so what would you sort of rate the film out if you had 1 to 10 out of watchability?
Ooh, that is a good question.
I'm up with maybe an 8 or 9, to be honest. I think it's all round a great film.
Yeah, I think I'd probably agree with you in the sort of 8 or 9 branch. Maybe, I don't know if I'm being really picky though, putting it at a 7.
7.
But then I don't know if that's because it's not usually my taste in film. I mean, I thought it was fantastic. In fact, there were some things that were like, you went, oh yeah. But there wasn't anything, there wasn't one part in that film that I actually went, wow. Or there wasn't a part in that film where I went, do you know what I mean?
I disagree with you, really. I thought that scene where the actual king loses it, I thought that scene was just amazing.
Oh, when they're outside?
No, not when they're outside. When he comes in, he goes, oh, do you know when he says about the F word?
Oh, actually. Okay, yes.
Exactly.
Actually,
there is that scene. That scene, I think, there's nothing better than that scene. That scene is, I'd go to watch that scene again.
Okay, I'll agree with you then, actually.
So what are we giving
it? I would...
on the basis of that scene.
I would give it the 8.
8, yeah, no,
only
I agree.
Because I don't think it's a film you'd watch over and over again.
No, I think you'd probably, once is probably enough.
Once, maybe twice.
Yeah.
Just to, like we said earlier, to pick up on the little clever things.
But we did also say it was quite a quick film for the kind of film
it was.
Yeah,
it. I mean, what was the running time, do we know?
I think it was just like 2 hours maybe.
Because it didn't feel like 2 hours.
No, it did.
I mean, usually I find when I'm watching a film for the first time, the film seems longer than it actually is. Only because I don't know what's coming next.
Yeah.
Kind of like when you go on a journey in a car, it always feels quicker on the way back. Kind of like that. But for me, it didn't. It felt like I was in there an hour and a half max.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah, definitely.
So we're giving it an 8.
I would give it an 8 out of 10.
Final verdict, 8. So that means it's a definite must watch.
Yes, definitely. Okay. Definitely recommend.
So go watch it.
Yes.
Okay, quickly moving on.
Time for some big industry news! Okay. My news story that I have picked out, which I think... it's a bit of semi-old news now. But it's something that some people might not be aware of. It came up, I think, on the 10th of January, I think. But David Tennant...
Doctor Who.
Doctor Who. Well, not the current Doctor.
No, he was.
The previous Doctor, for those who don't know, although I'm sure everybody does. David Tennant has decided to team up with Catherine Tate to do a West End revival of Much Ado About Nothing, which is being directed by one
Josie Bourke. You said that a bit fast. I think I don't know if I even got the title.
Much Ado About Nothing?
Much Ado About Nothing.
Yes.
Yes.
Shakespeare, which is being directed by Josie Rourke. It's appearing at Wyndham's Theatre, which will preview on the 16th of May. And then press night on the 1st of June, and we'll book up all the way to till the 3rd of September. Now,
so why do you recommend this?
Well, I think it might be interesting, only because I've seen him mainly as the Doctor, and kind of like with Johnny Depp, I watch him to see if he does anything different. Because he's been in danger of being typecast now, because he was in Doctor Who for, I think, a series too long, personally. But I think it might be interesting to see how Catherine Tate deals with it, more than anything else. I think Catherine Tate is more the draw than David Tennant. Now,
so has she not done any? What, has she done theatre before? I don't even know.
Well, Catherine Tate is currently in Season's Greetings at the National Theatre. So she does stage stuff. I don't know if she's done any Shakespeare, though. But again, I think that's a curiosity factor. For the record, David Tennant will be playing Benedict, and Catherine Tate will be playing Beatrice, which I believe are the opposite character, the two leads. So, that's an interesting story, which I think, if you can get tickets for it, they'll sell quick like Hamlet did. In fact, they've probably already sold out, in all honesty. But yes, that'll be a good one. Also, we have some big news on the director front, the Hollywood front.
Yep.
This is more your department, Mr. Jem.
So, yes, I guess. Basically, if anyone knows of that pirate film, what's it called? The Pirates of the Caribbean? Mm-hmm. Don't know if you've heard of that one, have you?
Is that...
It rings a bell.
Yeah. Is that the one with ships?
Yeah, the one with the sexy pirate.
Yes,
yes,
I know which one you're on about.
Well, yes. Basically, anyway, it's a little bit of news. Is Pirates of the Caribbean is back for a fifth film.
Yes, and the fourth one comes out this year.
Oh, yeah.
In the summer.
What was the last one? I can't remember.
The last one was at World's End.
Oh, yeah. Oh, this...
The fourth one's coming out this year, which is Fountain of Youth.
Oh, yeah.
Although I don't think the film's called Fountain of Youth, but they're hunting for the Fountain of Youth. And it has been confirmed...
That Terry Rosso, who originally wrote, I guess he's wrote all of the following. Yeah, he wrote the first four. So yeah, he's coming back to write the fifth one, which is no surprise really, if he's probably made a fair bit of cash on the first four.
Yeah, definitely. It's also been not confirmed, likely that Mr. Johnny Depp is going to be reprising his role as Captain Jack Sparrow, which. Surprised me, actually, because I had heard earlier, like, before the fourth film was confirmed, that he didn't really want to do a fourth one, and that he was going to do the fourth one, and then he was going to bow out, and they were going to build a character up in the fourth film to replace his character as the lead.
To be honest, he's a bit of the main star.
If they got rid of Johnny Depp's character, Captain Jack, then there would be no Pirates of the Caribbean, to be honest. But when Johnny Depp was asked about his return, he did say, and I quote, "As long as we can put all the puzzle pieces together, I would most definitely consider it." So, despite rumours...
He's going to be in it.
Yes, he's definitely going to be in it, I think. Unless the story's rubbish, which, considering it's the same writer... I doubt it. But then, I guess it depends how well the fourth film goes. Because I was a little disappointed by the third, I have to admit.
I don't know, I've just enjoyed all of them, really.
I mean, they're all enjoyable, but I thought as a Pirates film, Pirates of the Caribbean 3 was not up to scratch with the other two.
No, it wasn't, yeah, I guess.
I struggle to pick a favourite between 1 and 2. But 3 is definitely my least favourite of the three. And I'm not sure about 4, whether 4 is going to be any good. I guess we'll see. It has got Jeffrey Rush in it.
Which we know you like.
Who I have already said I quite like his performances, and I particularly like him as Barbossa. I love Johnny Depp's portrayal of Captain Jack. Not as big a fan of some of his other roles, but his Captain Jack is fantastic. It hasn't got Orlando Bloom in it.
What a shame.
And I'm going to say nothing.
That's a whole nother topic.
That is a whole nother topic.
Shall we swiftly move on?
So I'm looking forward to that. Right.
Last bit of news.
So, BBC cuts.
We're going to give you BBC. It's going to be a faster bit of news right here.
Kapow pow!
Basically, the BBC is seeking to save an extra 400 million in the coming, is it 3 years? Over the next 3 years?
I think it's 4 or 5 years.
4 or 5, that probably is better, but... quick, let's look at our research.
I can't find it. Damn it. I think it's 4 or 5 years.
Well, they need to save 400 million.
That's some... Oh, here we go. Okay, maybe not. Yes, but they're trying to save...
Overall, they're trying to save 400 million.
Between... Definitely within the next.
So what does that mean to us, Wayne? What does that mean to the people in the creative industries?
Well, to be honest, if I'm honest,
yeah.
The way the government's going, because the BBC are cutting it because the government are making cuts, blah, 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 blah. We all know that situation. I think it's going to affect the middle management people more than anything else. BBC have already said that they're looking to cut... I think they're planning to do something with BBC 3 and 4.
Yeah, because a lot of people have been saying, oh, why don't they just go and cut the BBC 3 and cut BBC 4?
Yeah, I mean, what they don't want to do is cut their digital stuff. I think they'd be very foolish to cut their digital stuff, like their iPlayer and things like that.
Yeah, definitely not.
But I think it will probably be BBC 4 that goes, in all honesty. BBC 3... Well, I don't know if it'll go. I think it will probably merge with BBC Three to create something new. But as I was saying to you the other day, I was watching BBC Three, and I saw the same programme on twice in the space of 3 hours.
But then you got to say as well that BBC Three does go and commission a lot of new writers. So
true.
If we lose that, are we going to lose all these opportunities for new writers?
I think we will, but. I don't think BBC would be stupid enough to take that away, only because Channel 4 are BBC's biggest threat at the moment. I don't think ITV are a big threat at all, because ITV have gone, oh, reality TV, let's throw money at that. Which, to be honest, I'm sick to death of.
Yeah, exactly. You can only go so far.
Yeah. And whereas Channel 4 are throwing a lot of money at particularly new comedy, which is where BBC 3... strives. So again, I think it will affect the management. I think it will affect the business side of everything, the jobs and all that. I don't think it will affect the writers as much, only because BBC are still going to need the writers, whether or not they lose channels or not. They're still going to need writers. It might make competition more fierce, but that's the industry. What do you think?
No, I agree that it's, they've come. I guess they've got the writers' room there who are always looking for new talented writers. So I think at the end of the day, if you are talented enough, who cares if it's BBC Three or BBC One? As long as you've got something good, then you've got a likelihood of getting commissioned.
Yeah, definitely. So, what do we think? Are we in danger, or is it just going to make things slightly more inconvenient for us?
I just think maybe it's a bit of a hoo-ha, really. All right, they do have to make a bit of cuts, but...
Everybody's making cuts at the moment.
Exactly.
I think it's just another company doing the same thing. I think BBC have been at this game for long enough now to know what's a good idea and what's not, I think. I don't think it's a big deal. I think, as you say, I think it's a bit mountain out of molehill type thing again.
Okie doke. So let's move on.
So, our big topic for
our main topic of the day.
Main topic.
It's our main
topic.
We've
been talking for ages.
I know, I'm sorry that everyone's listened to us for this long already. We didn't expect it to be this long.
No, we've been going on.
We do like to blabber, especially Wayne.
Sorry.
So, yeah, I came up with this idea
yes,
for this
part.
Yes,
this was your
because basically, as for my project that I'm doing recently, is just a short film. And I've been sitting there writing, and even my little brother says to me every now and then, he's like, Jem, why are you just always speaking to yourself? Why are you always whispering to yourself in that different voice? Like, he probably thinks I'm a bit of a schizo, really. But I was thinking, when it comes to script writing, sometimes the writer actually has to become, actually acts like they are that character. Yeah. So I was thinking, sort of what, maybe as you, as an actor, what sort of advice could you give maybe for someone who's writing, trying to become these characters?
Okay, advice. First of all, then, I'd say you really have to know your character's lifestyle. That's first and foremost. Do as much research as you want into it, but ultimately, you need to know the details, like what was their childhood like, what's their favourite food, the little things. Because, yeah, okay, that may not have a huge amount of detail story-wise, but it's those little things which control our decisions in our everyday lives. Like, you know, have they had bad history with women, for example, if it's a male, or even if it's a female, they had bad history with relationships, because, you know, it's those things that will affect the way that we react when we put into that situation later on. And also, you'll find that when you're coming up with the responses to situations, you'll automatically start filling in the blanks yourself. So that's, first of all, really know their background.
Because a lot of books say, they tell you, maybe before you actually start writing, that it's sometimes good to sort of write up a character CV, sort of.
Yeah, definitely.
His history, what he's done, maybe what he studied,
yeah.
What school he went to, how many brothers and sisters he's got. So you're sort of saying those kind of things.
And we, as actors, work the other way around. When we're given a script, the first thing we do, well, one of the first things we do, is we go through the script and write down all the information that the writer has told us about the character.
I mean, do you we only put down maybe a little bit of action, and then we put... Do you have to read that from the dialogue that we put? Because sometimes we don't... Like, writers don't try to go and put down a whole backstory, his lifestyle.
We only put maybe a little short sentence.
So, and then even with the dialogue, do you have to pull the character?
Well, what we'll do then as actors is, if we've taken the information that you've given us, whether it is even just he's aged 50, our job then is to fill in the blanks. And you may choose to write as much or as little background-wise about the character as you want, but if you've got it already in your head anyway, you don't have to put it down on the paper, because you'll probably find that a little bit more than what you expected to come out will actually come out, because you've made the links in your head.
So the more you sort of know your character, in some ways, the easier you're going to write.
Yeah, exactly. And because you'll then, once you've got that, you then find that the character's got a voice in your head already, only because, you know, there are people who have had rubbish lives, and they've got a chip on their shoulder. And those sorts of people talk to people in a very different way to somebody who's had a really cushy life and has had no problems to deal with, or, you know. So your character then will find a voice. And then you'll find that when it comes to dealing with, okay, a character said something to that character, you'll find that you know instinctively what that character would say in response. I mean, I've done a few shows where we've written it, but we haven't sat down and written it. We've got up on our feet and thrown ourselves into situations, and the whole scenes have come out of it. So we write in a more active sense. But I think you're essentially just doing the same, except you're playing it out in your head rather than actually physically. So once you've got your character background, you've got their voice, next thing you need to know really is what is a character trying to achieve in that scene?
So what's his goal, basically?
Yeah, what's his goal? Your character might have a goal in life that you're aware of, but specifically at the time is that situation, and how, what they're trying to achieve. I mean, take Fawlty Towers, for example. You can always see what Basil Fawlty is trying to achieve, but he just deals with it in a very bad way.
Yeah.
And that creates comedy, and it doesn't necessarily have to be for comedy. It works for normal situations as well.
Could I go back just to the developing the character, like getting, so just say I've created a new character, mm-hmm. and I've found out what he's done, but where do you sort of pull those sort of experiences? Is that from your own life? Is that, do you have to experience these people? Do you?
Well, I think as a writer, you'll probably do what an actor does, in that you will be pulling from your own experiences.
Because I know I base a character, maybe I pull a bit of that person's personality from over there, maybe I know someone else who's a bit like this, and you kind of pull different personalities together.
Yeah, definitely. And I would definitely say that you would use that. Because if the writer themselves can't get emotionally attached to their characters, then how can they expect their audience to, I suppose? And if it's based off real people and real, well, not necessarily events, but real people.
Then there's truth to it.
Then there's truth to it, yeah, exactly. And then your actors will find the job easier. There won't be that element of, oh, this is really cheesy rubbish. Because it's, I mean, I was saying about rom-coms and stuff, how I hate them. And romantic films, how I hate them, because they never ever play out like that, really, in real life. And I just sit there and go, oh, it's cheesy. Because I think it is, because I can't relate to that, because in my experiences, nothing's ever gone cushy and, oh, I'm in love.
Just falling into place, yeah.
Exactly. And I think that's where the importance of the writing is making sure that the people relate.
So really, in some ways, we're saying it's down to the writer to sort of experience, in some ways, as much as he can, when he's out, meet people, sort of draw from people he meets, draw from friends, and pull that sort of characterization from people around him.
Yeah, I'd say so. And I think, I mean, even if you're just taking things from secondary sources as well, like reading, watching films, watching TV, you'll soon pick up on what the good stuff is and what the bad stuff is, what to avoid and what not to avoid. Obviously, it's a lot harder to draw from secondary material. But your experiences, your life experiences more than anything else, and your emotions and all that sort of stuff, and other people's experiences, how they've dealt with it. You've got to constantly, as an artist, whether it's acting, music, dance, whatever, as an artist, you've got to constantly be observing other people. Because
that's where the truth is.
Yeah,
as we
exactly.
get back to truth, it's
yeah, exactly.
about finding that truth that people can relate to.
Mm. So,
okay, finally we're moving on to
our competition of the episode, segment, week, thingamajiggy.
Yeah, basically every week we're going to try give you a competition that we like the looks of. This week's one I've actually had a go at. Didn't actually make it, but hey, you win some, you lose some.
Oh, how quick did they get back to you then?
Well, it's every week, so once they finish the first week, they...
Okay.
But anyway, we'll actually explain what the actual competition is, otherwise it's going to be confusing. So, if Wayne, you want to just sort of introduce it.
Okay, the competition is called Next Best Page.
And where did you find that competition, Wayne?
It was on the BBC Writers' Room, I believe.
Yes, it was.
Which you can find at
www.bbc.co.uk/writersroom. We should have done that, that was really uncool.
Yeah.
That was really sad.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Anyway, yes, that on the BBC Writers' Room website, which they've got quite a few competitions, but this one stood out to Jen in particular, who then passed it on to me. Then what do you think of this? And I was like, yeah.
Well, I was first drawn to this because I think, well, you've just got to do one page, so it's not too daunting. It's not all create a whole sitcom, it's just one simple page.
Yeah. So the competition works in that there's already been first five pages, I think, written.
Basically, it's like they're looking to write a play, but what they're trying to do is to use, well, you've got 52 weeks of the year, and you've got to try, and the the competition puts it out to people out there to create their own next page of the competition. And basically what happened was they got on a writer who was James Graham, who wrote the first five pages of the script, and then it was up to everyone else, the competition was to do the next page in that script.
Mm-hmm. And so what happens then is they once they've picked the next page that's been sent in, it carries on to the next week.
And so those six pages, you'd go on and read the six pages and add your seventh page. And again, they'd get seven pages and you'd read the eighth and create the eighth page. So,
And then once that's all come together, they pull all the 52 pages together and that is their play, which they are actually intending to put on once it's finished. But I think that's really interesting, and I think collaborative sort of writing...
Well, it's just interesting because each week the story can go from one direction to a whole completely new direction. Because, I mean, even in the first week, they had the first five pages and they couldn't even make up their mind on which way they want to go with it. So they actually chose two pages last week.
They chose two last week.
So they've got, so you've now got seven pages.
But how are they going to work that then? Is that...
I don't know if they're going to... Obviously, they're not going to be able to do it every week, but...
Because surely now they've potentially got two different plays. Which page are you continuing from?
Well, they actually managed to sort it out so that now they chose one page which didn't mess it up. Then the seventh page actually goes off on a whole different tangent. So the sixth page was more of a continuation, sort of continuing from the fifth page.
Right. So then that other page that they've picked...
That seventh page is now a bit... It sort of opens it up again. It's a bit confusing. I think it's kind of gone against their regulations already. But no, it means that even if you put in your submission, they might even choose two pages.
If it's good enough in comparison with the rest of the competition, I guess. But they're so far on...
Page seven, yes.
Yeah. They took in their last submissions
Saturday, which was yesterday. For page eight. So
right.
Now, next week will be for...
So they're currently picking... Choosing
page eight. And next week they'll be looking for page nine, so you have time to get cracking on your page nine.
Yeah, presuming we get this out quick enough. Yep. So
check out the competition. It's www.nextbestpage.co.uk. And
yes,
they've got a short little video on there just to sort of explain again what we terribly explained.
Yeah, we're going to have to start practicing on our explanations of competitions.
Because I think we actually got a bit confused ourselves what the competition was about.
We will get better at this, I promise you. Okay, so that is us done, I think, other than a little bit of shameful plugging.
Yeah.
You can follow me on Twitter at Wayne_Ingram.
Or you can follow me at... Twitter, no. You can follow me on Twitter with, what, do I say my name? Do I just say...
You say at.
At my script quotes.
Do you want to try that again?
Okay, we're going to do this again.
Okay.
You can follow me on Twitter at my script quotes.
That's pretty good. You consider
the
voiceover
work. Did you get that?
Yeah.
Is that clear?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, my script quotes. Basically, what I do on my Twitter anyway... My name actually ain't my script quotes, but I just offer...
They're everybody else's script quotes.
They're everybody else's script quotes, but basically I'm just giving out these inspiring quotes for anybody and a bit of just friendly natter.
Yeah, I'm a bit the same, a bit of friendly natter, a bit of shameful plugging as well, which usually consists of something which I put on my website, which is www.wayne-ingram.co.uk. You can also email me at wayneingram@wayne-ingram.co.uk.
Yeah, you can give any feedback to Wayne's email. If there's any things you don't like about the show, please email Wayne.
Yeah.
That's why I have not included my email.
Oh, so you avoid all the hate mail.
Precisely.
Oh, I see. But yes, you can follow us, you can contact us by all means.
We would like to get your feedback if you thought the show was shit.
But you do realise we're going to have to put a caution on explicit material now that you've said.
Can't we just beep it out?
Oh, well, I suppose we could beep it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Swear, young listeners.
Yes, no swearing. It's bad. But yeah, contact us. Even let us know if there's any type of segment
or topics,
anything that you want us to address, talk
especially
about.
In the sort of writing, acting, collaboration sort of thing, so we can bounce in of ideas off each other. And
yeah, definitely. And remember that we're not actual pros.
So we're learning.
We're learning like you are, so don't take everything we say as gospel. It's just the opinions of young people.
Young, naive.
But we will definitely help if we can.
Yeah.
But yes, I guess.
Or another thing, if you've got any sort of, if you're already in or how you got your foot in the door, or
we
would love your advice.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Advice to famous, successful people. Yes, that would be very nice.
We would like to,
David Tennant. Yeah, I know you're listening because I said good things about you.
And Catherine Tate.
I'm sorry. And Jeffrey Rush. Jeffrey Rush, I'm a fan. Okay, that's...
That
okay.
is very wishful thinking.
Yeah, very wishful thinking.
But anyway...
But could you imagine if they were?
That would be kind of cool.
That would be pretty good. So anyway, yes, yeah. I guess that's us done.
That is. First podcast. It's a wrap.
It's a wrap.